Okay, good morning, everyone. And it's Monday, June 13th. Welcome to the CBAC Public Safety Committee meeting. I'm Mayor Wayman Furman from the City of Indio. I'll be chairing this meeting. And pursuant to Assembly Bill 361, we are still able to hold these meetings via video or teleconferencing. If you are in the public, you can also join this meeting. The instructions are on the front page of the agenda. And could I have a roll call, please?
Yes, good morning. Agua Caliente Band of Cuyah Indians?
Present.
Blythe? Cathedral City?
Here.
Coachella? Desert Hot Springs? Indian Wells? City of Indio?
Present.
City of La Quinta?
Present.
City of Palm Desert?
Present.
City of Palm Springs?
Here.
City of Rancho Mirage?
Here.
And County of Riverside. Chair, you do have a quorum.
Okay, thank you. The next item is the pledge. So if I could ask everyone to stand and place your right hand over your heart and join me for the Pledge of Allegiance. Ready, begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. All right. So, the next item is public comments on the agenda items. Do we have any public comment?
We did not receive any written comments, and I do not see any hands raised at this time.
All righty. So the next item is chair, committee members, and CVAC public, staff comments. And I'm going to go out of order a little bit, and I'm going to go ahead and start myself before we actually get to the groundbreaking of the Indio Public Safety campus. And I just want to start by recognizing an incident that took place on Wednesday, June 8th. We lost five U.S. Marines in an aircraft incident in Imperial County. And I want to read off their names and recognize them and ask the committee and everyone in the meeting to join me in a moment of silence. Those Marines' names were Corporal Carlson, Captain Lacepio, Corporal Rasmussen, Captain Sachs, and Lance Corporal Strickland. And if I could ask everyone to join me in a moment of silence. Okay, thank you. Tragic incident, and our prayers and condolences go out to everyone that's affected by that, and just very terrible incident that happened. So what I'll do is I'll open it up to committee members and CVAC staff for comments. We have any committee members who have comments? Nothing from Cathedral City, La Quinta, Palm Springs. Palm Springs?
Actually, I wanted to just raise something. So there were March for Our Lives rally. There was one in Palm Springs about, you know, ending gun violence and mass shootings in our schools. And there were quite a few participants from across the valley that came out on Saturday. And just the importance of really talking about these issues and just on our end as public officials, we need to make sure that we're putting in sound policy that protects our children. And supports our children so that they don't ever go down a path of violence in the first place. I know Councilmember Quintanilla was there and spoke as well, and I did too. Just wanted to thank everybody for participating in that and for supporting whether or not you could attend physically. I know most of you or many of you are support those efforts as well. So just wanted to highlight that.
Great. Thank you, Councilmember. Does anyone else have any comments?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this is John Pena. And excuse me, following up on those comments, I've asked our chief of police at the city of La Quinta to give us a presentation on potential school shootings and what we're doing to protect our children there and what the responses may be. It might be appropriate to have somebody do that at public safety as well to see what we're doing maybe on a valley-wide, area-wide instance and in those cases that how we kind of all can work together.
Great. Councilmember Cantania?
Thank you, Chair. I wanted to add a little bit to Councilmember or Mayor Pro Tem Gardner's comments. The rally was well attended. There was we'd say between 150 to 200 people that were there. And not only did we have speakers, I want to give a little extra appreciation to Grace and her mom, who gave very impactful firsthand impact statements. So it wasn't just we're here to talk about this and let you know. There were a lot of firsthand accounts of how this impacts us. And it's important when sometimes we think of it as a distant issue, that it's something that couldn't happen here until you hear local stories of how the impact is felt. So I'd like to thank Grace for not only mentioning that it happened, but for her statements that she shared. They were very powerful.
Great. Thank you, Council Member. Go ahead, Ms. Motrich.
And I wanted to comment also because I know some progress has been made on the government in Washington as far as some decision making. I checked with our city manager, and it was my understanding that the Palm Springs District School District does not have any school guards at their schools, and I'm hoping that that will change. I don't think our city is maybe doing all it can to protect our children and our businesses. And if our state, who seems to have a surplus of funds available, can finally step forward and say, yes, we are serious about protecting our children, and we do need to have on-campus guards, and we do need to have people who will go around and check to make sure doors are locked and gates are locked. I know it was an issue, and I know a number of people who are homeschooling their children because they were very unhappy in the Los Angeles area with preventative measures being taken on a regular basis as far as access to the school grounds and to the school offices. And I think there's a lot of talk that goes back and forth, but now that people seem to be a little bit more anxious to make safety happen, I hope one of the things that will be implemented is an on-campus guards and somebody who can be act in an official capacity where it's not just a uniformed security officer without a gun. I think that, you know, we're not doing ourselves a favor by having someone walk around and just look official with a uniform, but in the case of an emergency, is unarmed and unable to really take action that would be necessary to eliminate a possible catastrophe by someone on campus who might be a shooter. I hope it's something that will be considered seriously. We certainly have enough retired and off-duty officers who might be available if asked, but I think it's a road that we need to finally follow and say, yes, we are really going to protect our children. We are going to have somebody on campus that, if there is an active shooter, can step forward rather than waiting for police force to show up. And this person would at least know what's going on, where the active shooter might be, and give direction as far as how to best handle location of the active shooter and be able to get this situation shut down before it gets to a catastrophic stage. So I certainly hope that's the direction that everybody is heading in. You know, just as I say, having, you know, somebody walking around in a uniform just doesn't work anymore.
And thank you for your comments. And before we proceed, I just want to, for the record, announce that we have Pat Cooper from the county that just joined us for the record. So well, welcome. Good morning, Pat. And I'll move over.
Good morning.
Back to Councilmember Campania.
Thank you. I wanted to present an alternative view that the answer is funding more in mental health. I read a report and I would love to find it, or if somebody in the group wants to take the initiative, that in schools that did have an armed guard, the violence actually increased because the shooters knew about the presence of an armed guard. So they brought more ammunition, knowing that there was a chance that they would be intercepted. And that in the schools where they don't have as much of a police presence, but have additional funding for counselors, they're much better at diffusing the situations before they escalate. And again, I think that bears exploring, because yes, we have to find a common sense solution somewhere in the middle ground. But I don't think that having more armed officers in schools is beneficial. I would like to explore what we can do regionally to supplement mental health and to inquire and research what would be the best model. Thank you.
Well, I would happen to agree, and I don't think we need to get into a great debate here.
Yeah. But, Mr. Chair, I
feel that so, you know, we have to explore all the avenues that are available.
And council member, what I'd like to do, I hate to interject, but this is not a agenda item. So what I'd like to do is ask staff to bring this back to us.
Yes.
And also when we move over to the ex officio updates, maybe we can have our police chiefs or sheriff's department maybe agree to coming back and doing a presentation, because these are some complex conversations that we have to have. But it's not only on the policy side, it's on the response side. And sometimes as policymakers, we jump ahead of what sometimes we read or what we see on television, what's actually happening. And it's very different from a response perspective and what we actually want to put out there, being that social media is so influential with our young adults and folks who are going through crisis and some of the folks who are doing these things. So I think that we should bring this back and maybe have a presentation from our police, one of our sheriffs one of our chiefs, our sheriff's department, of what they could tell us what they're doing to prevent some of these things and intervene if this happens from their perspective. So
I would love to see that and get the real facts and all the data that goes along with it.
Yeah, because in reality, our law enforcement, they train for this all the time. This is not something that's new. It's just when these incidents unfortunately take place, we have a highlight on them. But our law enforcement and our crisis response teams who deal with folks who have mental crisis, they train on these issues. And that's something that, you know, we make the policy, but they're the ones with the boots on the ground. So I'd rather have them talk about it from that perspective. But I do appreciate the comments and the insight. And I would also suggest, we have a 2x2 meetings with our school district. If you want to find more information, what's going on in your school district, we have those meetings with our police chief and our superintendents and school districts. So that's another avenue if you need more information. However, in the interest of time, I'd like to ask if anyone else has any other comments.
I do. Pat Cooper here with the county.
Go ahead, Pat.
Hi, good morning, everybody. Happy Monday. Just want to remind folks, or if you don't know, that the county is having their budget hearings today. They start at 9:30 and go till about probably 3:34. We'll have a regular board meeting tomorrow, Tuesday, and then resume the budget hearings at 1:30 tomorrow, Tuesday afternoon. So if you have any thoughts or interests in suggestions, please forward them to Supervisor or myself. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Pat. And I don't see any other hands raised, so I will move on to item 5A, which is the groundbreaking of the Indio Public Safety Campus. And of course, we're super excited about that in the city of Indio. We did have our groundbreaking of this campus, and it's going to be on the existing property. It's a $50 million project, and it's going to consist of three buildings with a new dispatch center, a new fire station headquarters for Station 86, which was our first station in the city of Indio, administrative offices, training facilities for our police and fire. So this is really a state-of-the-art public safety campus that's really needed in our city. And it's going to be a 43,000 square foot facility, and it's due for completion in 2024. So, we're super excited about that. And it's for our community. You know, we need to have safe, state-of-the-art, workspaces for our public safety and our first responders and their support staff. And as we can see, as our communities continue to grow, sometimes we're faced with some of these issues in our communities, and we have to have the right equipment, for communication. We need to have the right vehicles. We need to have the right living quarters and make sure that we're ready to go. And we put highly trained, competent officers and firefighters out there on our streets, to protect our families and keep us safe. And that's really exciting in the city of Indio and for surrounding communities, because we do handle dispatch, for other communities as well. So that's very important, in our community. So I will now move on to ex officio updates. And I believe Chief Washburn is with us, and he likes to add to anything I mentioned about the groundbreaking. The floor is open for our ex officio members. We have any hands raised?
Yes, we do. Chief Washburn, just a minute while Zoom brings him in.
Okay.
And if other ex officios also want to raise their hands if they have any updates, we'll be happy to bring them in as well.
All righty. There he is. We see you, Chief. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Mayor Furman. So, wanted to thank everyone for attending the groundbreaking. I can't wait till we can give a tour for that facility. Like the mayor had mentioned, absolutely imperative that we have state-of-the-art facilities to keep our community safe. It's nice to have a good building to work out of, but my major issue throughout this whole project has really been the fact that our 911 center is housed in a double wide trailer. And so in the event of a seismic event, we would possibly lose all of our communication ability. As we transition to PSEC, that'll be less of a concern, but the main issue is we're still dispatching out of a temporary structure that we've had for 17 years. So it's a big thing for us. I would make just a brief comment. I know this item may be coming back, but the Desert Sand Unified School District has its own security, and then they also contract with us for four police officers. So they pay half of a fully burdened rate for 12 months in order to get those officers. So right now, our school officers are going to be working the summer school as well. So we've done a number of things. Again, we'll leave that for later. I also would want to point out that the 21st Century Policing Project that was commissioned by President Obama, having school resource officers was actually listed by that commission as one of the main ways to engender trust in the police. So there's a lot more than just armed security. And so again, we'll bring that issue back, but just wanted to mention that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief, and thank you for your insight. Do we have any other hands raised?
I don't see any other hands raised at this time.
All right. So we will move on to our next item, which is the approval of the May 9th, 2022 Public Safety Committee minutes. If no one likes to pull anything, I would entertain a motion.
So move, Mr. Chair. La Quinta.
Second, Cathedral City.
Okay, we have a motion by, oh, hold on. We have a hand raised. Councilmember Cantania.
Thank you, Mayor. I would like to add into the minutes that the discussion initiated with my, or regarding the ban was my suggestion or the presentation to create a limitation or a similar ordinance. Thank you. Just for the record.
Okay. So I do have a motion by La Quinta and a second by Cathedral City. And if you will take a vote on that. Everyone says aye. Raise your hand.
Aye. Aye.
All right. Do we have any nays or abstentions? All right. Looks like the minutes pass. We'll move on to item number 8, which is the discussion item. That is CVAG representative on Riverside County's Emergency Medical Care Committee. And Erica, you'll be handling that?
I will. Thank you, Chair. Good morning again, members. You may recall this item actually came before you last year as well. The EMCC has been around for several years, and under a county resolution, CVAG gets to nominate a city manager to represent us on this 17-member committee. And the committee advises the supervisors on all aspects of emergency medical care within the county. They meet quarterly, and for some time, the City of Rancho Mirage's city manager was the representative. That was followed by the City of Indio. And when Mr. Scott retired, you all nominated Indio City Manager Brian Montgomery to fill the remainder of the term. The term ends at the end of this month. Mr. Montgomery has offered to pass that along to another city manager. Our executive director did have a roundtable discussion with the city managers a couple weeks ago and asked for any interest. And Coachella City Manager Gabriel Martin has expressed interest. So staff is recommending that you all nominate him as the next appointee. It's a 3-year term ending in 2025.
Great.
Mr. Chairman, I'll make a motion to appoint Gabe Martin as a representative.
Second, Cathedral City.
All righty. We have a motion on the floor by La Quinta and a second by Cathedral City. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Any nays or abstentions? All right. Congratulations to City Manager Gabe Martin. I almost said Martinez, sorry. So we'll move on to the next item, which is item B, public safety concerns related to Mylar balloons.
Yes, thank you, Chair. With us today, we have IID's Government Affairs and Communications Officer, Antonio Ortega. We'll be providing you a presentation. As Councilmember Quintanilla noted, and as noted in the staff report, this is an item that came up among you all at your last meeting. First by Councilmember Pena and then others had raised various aspects of what to pursue. Staff has outlined some legislative steps that the state has taken and is considering. Mr. Ortega is here to provide us kind of a more in-depth analysis on exactly the concerns here in the Coachella Valley. And we also have Edison. If there's an Edison-specific question, Edison is available as well in the audience.
Great. Mr. Ortega, the floor is yours.
Good morning, committee. Thank you, first of all, for allowing us the space to speak to you this morning about this issue. I know that a few of you that are also members of IID's Energy Consumers Advisory Committee have already heard of this presentation, but wanted to, again, thank you for this opportunity. So we do have a short presentation. I'll go right through it, but then answer any questions that you may have regarding this issue. So you may have already heard about this either through the local media reports or just hearing about the issue of Mylar balloons. And I know that it's something that we use to celebrate, and it should be something that we continue to celebrate. But it does create concerns for utilities, especially when they impact our grid and create power outages. So this is a serious issue. And I would like to provide at least some background on our service area and some of the things that we see. But to some of the current laws in the books and what Erica mentioned. I think she did an excellent job with the staff report that's included in your agenda to provide you some of those additional details. But just by way of some background, we do have some laws in California that govern Mylar balloons and their use, but none of these laws do an outright ban on Mylar balloons. So I want to make that clear. I've heard some people refer to this as a Mylar balloon ban. That's not what these laws do. And the ordinances that we may be looking at suggesting or recommending to local governments like the counties and the cities could be done in very different ways. But there are some cities in California that have recently enacted some type of restriction or even the outright ban of some of Mylar balloons and their use in their cities. Glendale, Malibu, and I believe Hermosa Beach are some that come to mind. Next slide, please. So what are the trends? What is it that we see and what does our data show us? Is that usually around the time when there are some holidays, for in particular, the month of February, Valentine's Day, May, Mother's Day, and June, Father's Day, but also graduations. These are the times when our data shows us that we have the most contact between Mylar balloons and our grid. And unfortunately, again, sometimes that creates prolonged power outages, sometimes momentary outages, sometimes they have to, they go into longer duration. And those are the times when we start getting the phone calls. People are concerned, when is our power gonna come back on? Our field crews are out there trying to remove them. But I will say that some cities are more impacted than others. And what do I mean by that? Well, if you have overhead lines, then that's usually the cause of the outage because balloons tend to get caught in those overhead power lines. When you have newer communities with a lot of undergrounding, we don't see this issue occur. So as you'll see later in my slides, I have some data in Imperial County in comparisons to the Riverside County or the Coachella Valley part of our service area has a higher frequency of these events just because we have more miles of overhead power lines in our Imperial Valley community. Next slide. So just a quick snapshot of some of our continued public awareness efforts on this issue. I would say that here in the past 3 years, we've really stepped up our engagement with our local communities, with our media partners, trying to, again, just minimize or increase the public awareness, which in turn helps minimize these outages and that are caused by something as, again, something that seems such an everyday thing that we all use, right? Mylar balloons. But again, they can create havoc on our system. And we're trying to not just educate the public, but also you, our elected officials, our NGO partners, school districts, others, just, again, create more awareness and hopefully the behavior changes with that increased awareness. Next slide, please. So here's a short video, and Eric, if you want to just go ahead and play it while I speak. This is not an IID service area, but this is a video that us and other utilities, APPA, which is our Association of Public Power, provided us this video. So that's really what can occur in our backyards when we have contact between a Mylar balloon and one of our overhead transmission lines or distribution lines. So bringing it back home to IID in our service area, how many outages have we seen here in the past 2 years or from January through February of this year? We've had close to 21,000 customers affected at some point or another by an outage that was caused by a Mylar balloon contact. That's a total of 56 outages in just 14 months. This obviously creates a cascade effect. Loss of power to some of our first responders. We had an incident just recently in the city of Imperial here in the Imperial County where there was a Mylar balloon contact right across the street from the police station, and the police station was momentarily without power. They have a backup generator. But again, it does show that, you know, the impacts are in not just in our residential communities, commercial, but it can impact our first responders as well. Loss of power to our customers and those who are dependent on medical devices. That's obviously a concern for us. And then just the general cost to repair and to retrieve these balloons, to put our system back, that creates costs, not just to the utility, but by extension to all of us, our public ratepayers. And then finally, fire risk. So you saw in that last video, when there are small explosions, that also could create a potential for fire. And then again, just another snapshot of some of our recent coverage on outages that are caused by Mylar balloons, not just in Imperial County, again, but even in our community there in the Coachella Valley. So here's the data that I quickly referenced. Imperial Valley, as you can see, has approximately 62% of the outages caused by Mylar balloons were in this part of our service area, compared to about 38%, which are in the Coachella Valley. And then here in this graph, you'll see the month-to-month, the customer number of customers impacted on a month-to-month. So you can see there that data is well broken down, starting back in January all the way through February of this year. So what are the options and next steps? And again, that's why we're ultimately here today. As you heard me mention earlier, as much as Sacramento, and we do have new legislation this year, in the past 5 years, we've had three bills introduced in Sacramento. But I think this is a local issue. And really speaking directly to our constituents here at the local level is where we feel has the biggest impact. So considering adopting local ordinances that restrict the sale or use of Mylar balloons, this is something that we're now, this presentation that I'm making here today is something that we've started to do with both Imperial County cities, Riverside County cities, and also with our partners at both Riverside and Imperial County. So we're taking this show on the road, and this is one of the first presentations that I make. I'm, again, happy to be here in front of CVAG. I think you have obviously the all the right people here, and having the opportunity to just talk about this with your committee and consider what each of your cities and the county may feel that would be appropriate within your respective cities. That's really all we're here to do is impress upon you the importance of this to our communities, to our customers, and how can we work together and collaborate on what could become a model ordinance for other utilities to follow across the state of California.
And Chair, if I might just add on to that, as detailed in the staff report, the staff is seeking some direction from you all on what next steps should be taking. If any, I would point out that this actually also came up at the Energy and Environmental Resources Committee meeting last week. This was not in the context of another IID presentation, and we did mention to them that you all were considering this. If this moves forward, then we would cross refer it to both committees come September.
Sorry, I was muted. Before we move forward, just for the record, I want to add that our vice chair from Coachella, Councilmember Jacinto, has joined us. So welcome and good morning.
Thank you. Apologies for joining late. I had a schedule conflict this morning.
That's okay. Thank you. We do have a hand raised. Mr. Gregory.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the presentation. Very interesting. I was hoping, though, maybe somebody could speak a little bit to this Assembly Bill 847, exactly what it would cover. I just kind of peeked real quick. It looks like it's still alive and moving forward. And, of course, I'm a fan of a broader addressing of the issue because, we can hodgepodge, limit the possession or technically, the sale would be easier. The possession, that would be interesting. But it seems like a statewide answer to this, or at least a move forward, would be a real positive step. So I was wondering if we could hear a little bit about that Assembly Bill, what it would cover, and if there's any insight as to whether it's expected to pass.
I could take first stab. Go ahead, Warren and Tony.
Yeah, so it's okay with you, Erica. So we've been involved at our association. So we are supportive of the bill, obviously. The Municipal Utilities Association, Southern California Public Power Authority. But yes, this bill is still alive. It's in the Senate. There were some amendments that were put into the bill, which caused a little bit of delay between when the bill got out of the Assembly and when it was actually heard in the Senate. But I would agree with you that having a statewide law that is on the books across the entire state would make it easier. Unfortunately, I think what we've seen, at least to now, in the past, I would say 10 years, we've had proposals to do a restriction or a ban. All of those have failed. So the steps that have been taken at the state level are what I would call baby steps, incremental in their approach, which is why you have cities that are taking this on their own and just passing their own local ordinances. But going back to AB 847, so what the bill does, it requires the Office of Energy Infrastructure Safety to adopt regulations and look at other potential materials. There's some test trials that are happening now. SDG&E is the sponsor of this bill, and they are working on what could potentially be a new material that is less conducive to having or to causing an arc between our systems. So I don't want to get into too many details, but this potential new type of balloon, foil balloon, could be created or it could be sold in California if it meets these standards that we still don't know if it will be the answer that we need. So what the bill does, it would require that by 2024, September 1st of 2024, that the Office of Infrastructure Safety work with this third party think tank, is probably a word for it, to come up with the potential for a new material. Now, depending on what happens with those trials, you may still not have the answer to this question, right? So although we support this incremental step and we support the bill and the effort, we're still quite a ways away from seeing the state of California actually make a real impact to our everyday lives when it comes to outages that are happening today in our communities.
Yeah. So if they can't develop this type of balloon, it seems in the summary it said then Mylar balloons would be prohibited. Is that still in the bill in its current form?
Correct. So right. So by 2026, if the regulations are not adopted, then you could potentially have a ban on Mylar balloons. I'm still a little bit skeptical of whether that part of the bill makes it to the governor's desk, but that's just me. And you know, we've been at this for many years, so. Maybe I'm getting a little bit jaded when it comes to thinking that there will actually be a statewide effort to do anything.
Perhaps
to a restriction.
But we won't be limited in our ability to act if it gets somehow taken out of the bill. That would be different. So I'm encouraged that there's a broader effort looking. I think at this point, maybe we should consider supporting that effort and supporting leaving in the some type of reasonable deadline that if they can't develop an alternative, that then the sale become prohibited. I'm not necessarily a fan of hodgepodge prohibitions because they're problematic in many ways. It's funny. I found a Mylar balloon in my yard yesterday evening from one of my neighbors having a graduation party, but I also found some other trash and a receipt from a Vons in San Diego. So again, you know, you look at that and say, well, maybe, you know, a prohibition would be good. But again, I think a lot of times we put a lot of these rules in place that are difficult to actually police, to actually enforce, limit our local businesses. So I hope we take all of those things into consideration because they're not always very effective. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We do have a hand up from a representative from Southern California Edison. So, and I have a couple of hands raised, but we'll get to them. So if you want to bring them in. Ms. Cusack?
Yes. Hello. I'm still connecting. So thank you for allowing me the opportunity to speak. I'm really I'm pleased that you've brought this before you. Southern California Edison has for years educated the public and advocated for some measures to reduce the impacts of Mylar balloons. And they also can result in wildfires and have in our service territory. Last year, we had over 1,100 outages due to Mylar balloons. And the economic impact is in the millions of dollars, not just to us making the repairs that can be caused to our system when they spark and damage the system, but also to the businesses that lose power. In addition, I know this is a public safety discussion, but there are environmental impacts to Mylar balloons. We are really in a fallout zone for Mylar balloons. And when they fall into the national park, it's an issue with the wildlife. They eat them and they die. And so, you know, for us as a company, we have advocated strongly over the years for a larger, broader, restriction. We support AB 847 as well, which would require them be made out of something that's doesn't conduct electricity, but there still may be, you know, the environmental issue. So maybe something you can consider at your environmental committee. And thank you again for your consideration of this item. And I did send a lot of our support letter and some other materials to Erica. I'm sure she shared with you. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. And thank you for providing that data. That's very interesting. So thank you for that. I'll move on to our Vice Chair, Jacinto.
Thank you. Yeah, I was just looking up the history of some of the other state efforts, and it looks like one of the last ones was proposing criminal penalties. Oh. And so that was the reason that it was vetoed. So it actually passed both the state assembly and Senate, but it was vetoed by Governor Brown because he felt it was unnecessarily criminalizing kind of basic behavior. So perhaps the one that's being proposed now, in my view, it looks a lot more reasonable in terms of how it addresses the issue. I just wanted to make sure that we're also keeping our finger on the environmental issue aspect of this. And maybe it was mentioned in the first half of the presentation that I missed, but in addition to causing problems with the electrical lines, it's also a huge environmental problem. Because Mylar balloons don't biodegrade, and you know they float into everyone's yards, as Councilmember Greger was saying, and so forth. So it's yet another reason to consider this issue. I also agree that hodgepodging in this type of issue would just be completely ineffective, because having five cities ban Mylar balloons and four cities not is not going to solve any problems. So those are my comments.
Great. Thank you for your insight. We'll move on to Councilmember Smotrich.
Hi. Thank you so much. And thank you, Antonio, for that presentation. This is obviously a very serious issue that a lot of us don't think about when it comes to celebrations. And nobody wants to put a kibosh on celebrations. And Mylar balloons are absolutely beautiful. We did before. Without them before, we had lots of other kinds of balloons that didn't seem to pose a threat. But when you're talking about the shutdown of the electrical grid, or when you're talking about, especially in the desert here, when we may have a shutdown of our air conditioning in the 120 degree weather, when you're talking about medical devices and equipment being shut down and the risk of fire, these are things that affect millions and millions of people and billions of dollars just to have celebration balloons that may not cause a problem, but there's 1,100 outages because of balloons that was just reported. That is very, very frightening. 2026 is a long way away. And I think that if we can do something on the local level, before we have to wait until these bills get passed in Sacramento, then it only is in our favor. It is very frightening to think that a couple of Mylar balloons can do so much damage and devastation destroy people's homes, destroy people's lives, possibly if their electrical units go off and they're dependent upon them. So if there's anything that we can do, and I would love to get more information about it, where I can present it to my city council. And in Rancho Mirage, of course, we have a lot of our underground wiring, so it may not affect us as much. But as was mentioned, some of these items are brought in from other areas. So, you know, does it really make a difference if we shut down our sales of Mylar balloons? Maybe it does. And it maybe it's something we need to take more seriously. And I would like to present it, you know, as part of my council comments at our meeting. But I think people are not aware of the devastation that can actually occur from just a couple of balloons hitting some wires. I think that that video showed a lot that most people are not even aware of. And we take these pretty balloons for granted. And, you know, if we have to go back to the old fashioned balloons, well, so be it, if it's going to save people's lives and people's homes. So if Great. There's things that we can do and bills can be introduced, you know, in Sacramento, that's great. But if there's things we could do locally in our Riverside County and Imperial County, then I would love to have that pursued.
Great. Thank you. You know, we do have, let me see, June 27th is our next executive committee meeting. And I don't know if we want to make a recommendation today to our executive committee in some direction. It was a very informative presentation, and what we've been doing in the city of India working with IID is really getting that messaging out there with the outreach. And I will make the suggestion, if it's not already happening, to really work with IID and Southern California Edison to get this information out there so folks are well aware of the dangers of these Mylar balloons and the devastation that they cause in our communities. And hopefully that would curb it. I'm not sure if, you know, it's a hard one, because if we wait till 2026, I mean, we're in the summertime right now, and in June we have graduations. We just finished our graduations, and, you know, there's been a lot of balloons out there. I've had my own incidents with Mylar balloons in our city that were very scary. So I just want to, you know, open it up for conversation. We need to provide a recommendation, or do we want to wait and see if the executive committee wants to take action on it?
Chair, if I might, having some direction on if there's a step you'd all like to take before this, or as the state law is being considered and before a state ban may or may not be enacted, if that is the general consensus, staff can work with IID to, and our partner over at SCE to come up with some framework based on the draft ordinance. There's a draft ordinance, a kind of a framework of a draft ordinance as a IID has provided, and we could provide some more firm options or a discussion and bring that back in September. Our intent would be to also route that, given the interest at the last meeting, also through, and the impacts also through the Energy and Environmental Resources Committee. And if you all in the E&E committee find some consensus, then we would bring it to exec for discussion. And we will present this, though, just as an information item at our next exec meetings, just so they're aware that you're all considering it. Okay. But we're happy to have any feedback on what kind of boundaries may or may not want to be considered.
Great. Thank you for that suggestion. I'm in favor of that, but I will move on. I have some hands up. So I will start with Councilmember Castaneda.
Thank you. I would like to know if it would be possible, or if the group would find interest in creating some support piece or sending something to Sacramento in support of AB 847 to help move it along, and saying there is broader support and help kind of move those slow wheels a little faster.
I think that's something that staff could work with in this discussion. Correct, Erica?
We can, and we could certainly put if there's a interest in a letter of support for 847, we could certainly put that to exec for their concurrence at the end of the month and get that in to the legislature as they consider the bill.
Okay, great.
But is there anything we can do locally besides try to make our constituents more aware of the dangers we're facing, especially in these summer months? Can we do something?
Well, I want to just add that, you know, most of the cities have been working with our local electric companies, and that outreach is very important. And you know, it's been out there on social media. We put it out on our city website and our city social media. So I think that's very important, getting it out to social media and our community, because you know, that's kind of the fastest way to get things out there and just continue to educate the public. You know, these are things that I just learned the last couple of years. So I think the outreach is very important. So thank you. I'll move over to Councilmember Gregory.
Thank you very much. So my suggestion was just what my colleague said. So I just want to also add my voice that I think we should, since we have a bill that's actually moved out of the assembly and is now in the Senate, and it would at least start to address these issues. I know there's some concern that it wouldn't necessarily prohibit until 2026, but frankly, this has been an issue for how many years and it hasn't moved anywhere. So I think that the immediate step we should take is to support that bill, especially if it contains a reasonable cutoff date. Doesn't mean that's all we have to do. I'd also be interested in seeing what we can do locally, but I don't think it won't do us any good to wait till September to debate whether we want to support that bill. I think we need to support that now. So I would recommend that we move that forward now. Thank you.
Great. We have
one more. If you're making a motion, I would certainly second that.
I would certainly make a motion to support AB 847 and send those letters.
Okay. So it looks like we have a motion for letter support for Assembly Bill 847 and a second by Smotrich. And before we proceed on a vote, I have one more comment from Vice Chair Jacinto.
Well, I agree with both Councilmember Gregory and also Councilmember Quintanilla. And if I could seek clarification perhaps on the motion, which I was also going to propose, it would be my preference that we would submit a letter of support from our committee and also make a recommendation to the executive committee for that purpose, rather than waiting for another committee meeting. If we both do it, even better, more support, and the lawmakers in Sacramento will see more names and more people supporting. And also on that point, to what Councilmember Smotrich was asking, you know, we can also submit letters of support for this bill and others from our city councils, mm-hmm. and for the more the better, because like I said, lawmakers see those letters of support coming in, they know that they have local support for their efforts too, and it makes it even more likely that it'll pass and that the governor will sign it. So anyway, to try to clarify the motion, Councilmember Gregory, were you proposing that our committee send the letter, or that it goes to executive committee?
I don't know about the CBEC process, whether individual committees can send, because I think everything goes through the executive committee. So maybe somebody can clarify that.
Your knowledge of CBEC process is correct, Councilmember. However, we could certainly draft a letter of support for the executive committee that also includes a co-sign of the chair from public safety. I think that we've certainly done that for transportation items in the past, and we'll be happy to circulate that letter to your cities as well, should the executive committee approve that.
Perfect.
Great. Exactly what she said. So we have a motion on the floor by Cathedral City, a second by Ms. Smotrich. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any nays? Abstentions? Great. Motion passes. We have some direction, so we'll get that letter done. Thank you all for your comments. Thank you, Mr. Ortega, for that presentation. Very informative and educational, and let's continue to get that outreach out there and work with our local electric companies. So we'll move on to the next item, which is item C, Riverside County's Coordinated Response to Asylum Seekers. And this will be handled by Bruce Barton, the director of Riverside County's Emergency Management Department. Is Mr. Barton with us?
He is, and while we're waiting for Zoom to catch up with us and bring him in, I would just point out the staff report has a bit of background. This is an item that the county also provided you a briefing on with around this time last year, and some of the more updated figures are in your staff report. And there's also been some communication, I think, to cities in recent months, and we did want to provide you all with a direct update. So our Director of Emergency Management Department, Bruce Barton, the county is here. Thank you. Bruce?
Good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you so much for having me and providing the opportunity to give this update. So this is related to the ongoing asylum seeker mission This is a joint mission between the County of Riverside and the State of California. As just a brief review of the background, these are mostly family units that are what is referred to as EWIs. In other words, they've entered without inspection. They've crossed the border. They have subsequently been apprehended by Customs and Border Patrol. They are coming across and have been coming across for well over a year now in such large numbers that the Border Patrol does not have the ability to house, feed, and take care of these individuals. So they are pushing them out to their satellite stations, where they would otherwise be released onto the street at those locations. For Riverside County, those locations are the City of Blythe Border Patrol Station, the City of Indio Border Patrol Station, and the City of Murrieta Border Patrol Station. Those street releases back in 2019 actually did start to occur, and that's when the county and the state put together our response and the operation that I'll review very quickly with you. What we are doing is we are still going out to those three locations. We are meeting the busloads of asylum seekers that, once again, would otherwise be released onto the street. We are providing screening services. We are providing testing for COVID. If they are positive, we are transporting them to hotels that have been secured by the state of California, where they undergo isolation quarantine until they are safe to be released. Once again, as a reminder, these individuals, to qualify as asylum seekers, they have to have sponsors. So they all have someplace to go, and they do not necessarily want to remain here in Riverside County. As a matter of fact, the overwhelming majority of them do not remain here. They want to be on to their destinations. So once they've completed that isolation quarantine, if they did test positive, they do move on to those locations. If they are not, if they do not test positive or have not been exposed, they are taken to hotels or to our non-government organizations. That's Galilee Center or hotels on Western Riverside County, where they're supported by Salvation Army. And moved on to those transportation, to those destinations that they want to go to. Numbers to date, we've seen 30,109 come through. 10,409 of those have been juveniles. 26,799 have been sheltered. And once again, unless it's isolation quarantine, that sheltering is normally from one to 3 days because they do want to move on. Of that 30,109, 3,310 have gone into isolation quarantine. It means they either tested positive or were exposed to COVID. The majority of people that are coming across the border are being returned to their origin, are returned to Mexico under Title 42. This is part of the U.S. code that was enacted that allows the U.S. government to send them back based on the potential health risks related to the ongoing pandemic. There's been some discussion about Title 42 being lifted. The Biden administration has expressed a desire to do that. However, there was a federal stay put in place on the lifting of Title 42, and we do not believe at this point in time that that is going to be revisited for probably another at least 3 months, maybe even 4 months. That's the intel that we're getting from our federal partners. I'll share with you just very openly from my viewpoint as emergency management is kind of coordinating for Riverside County, all of the department activities and coordinating with the state. Don't see an end in sight on this. I'm sure everybody continues to see the ongoing news that we do have caravans that form. The latest one looks like it's been broken up down there in southern Mexico and will not advance forward. But it doesn't look like there's going to be, any end in sight on this as far as folks coming across the border being apprehended and continuing to be pushed out to the Border Patrol locations. I want to be clear that our objective, the County of Riverside's objective, is twofold. Number one, these people would be released on the street, so there is a real humanitarian issue here that we are assisting with. Number two is if, we're seeing between a normal day, we see between 80 and 100. We have seen as many as maybe 220 Now, just imagine at those locations I mentioned, if those busloads of people were being released on the street there and the potential impacts to those communities. So we are, you know, the second objective of our ongoing operation is to mitigate the impacts on our communities that might otherwise be felt if we were not providing these safety net services. I think that's all I have for you at this point in time, but I am very willing to answer any questions if I can.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Vard. Very informed.
I just have one question. I just have one question.
Yes, ma'am.
The numbers that you quoted, over what period of time does that cover?
This is about 14 months that we've been doing this.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for that information, Mr. Barton. Do we have anyone with any questions for Mr. Barton or comments?
I have a few comments, Chair.
Go ahead.
Okay. I just want to clarify, I'm not sure if it was clear in the presentation there that Mr. Barton is referring to asylum seekers. So these are individuals that are entering the United States as refugees, fleeing violence or other persecution in their home countries and seeking safety in the United States. We're not just talking about, you know, run-of-the-mill immigrants, so to speak, that are seeking a better life in the United States, but we're talking about people who are seeking relief and safety from specific incidents of violence and threats of violence in their home countries. So it's so great that the county has been able to hold this line for the last few years where they're assisting with refugees processes into the United States and finding a safe route to their homes in the United States. They're entitled to that protection under the law. And I really appreciate the way that the county has provided that service and been able to provide that shelter for these families. I also wanted to mention, in addition to protecting existing communities to some extent by helping people into shelter, we're also protecting the asylees' well-being and safety so that they're not released into streets while also fleeing violence and persecution in their home, in their countries of origin. So that's another great benefit and humanitarian purpose of the shelter that the county is providing. Thank you for that.
Yes, thank you for those comments. And yeah, the county's doing an excellent job of getting out in front of this. And like Mr. Barton mentioned, we don't see an end in any, you know, in the future. So having these mechanisms in place is really beneficial to our communities and the asylum seekers. So I'll continue to open it up for any other comments or questions for Mr. Barton. Go ahead, Ms. Gardner.
Thank you. Just had a question about the county's, will the county be providing refugee services? So recently we had an Afghan family that entered Palm Springs and we've been assisting them. And I contacted the state and the state told me that there's a state program for refugee services, but that the County of Riverside does not participate in that. So I was wondering if there's any update on the county participating in that program, which provides state funding. I know there was interest in Jewish Family Services coming to provide refugee resettlement services in the County of Riverside, but the state didn't feel like there was enough county support for that. It seems like something that I know the county would be interested in doing, and then maybe there's some wires that were crossed. So I'm wondering if you have any update or information on that piece.
You know what? I don't, but I can take that back and circle back with Erica. That's probably a question that would better be directed at our Housing and Workforce Solutions Department, who supports those efforts along with our NGOs. You know, most of the time when folks come into the county from other countries and you know, they're seeking asylum or they're refugees, they usually go directly to the non-government organizations like Galilee Center, and they get services there. But in some instances, I know the county does provide some services, particularly if it looks like they're going to be homeless. So we can circle back with our homeless and workforce solutions folks and ask that question and get that question back to you.
Thank you.
Great. Great question. And we'll get that information. And I believe staff get it to all of us, so we're aware of that. And before we even move on, I just want to thank our nonprofits as well for partnering with the county. It's so beneficial. You know, those partnerships and relationships are very crucial moving forward. So I also want to thank our nonprofits for working with the county. And thank you for your information and presentation, Mr. Barton. And keep up the great work. Thank you. We appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All righty. So we'll move on to item number 9, which is information. That's attendance record that's in your packet. So we'll continue to item number 10, which are public comments on non-agenda items. So do we have any public comment?
We did not receive any comments, and I do not see any hands raised.
Not a one, huh?
Not a one.
And so then we'll move on to number item 11, which are announcements. Our upcoming Public Safety Committee meeting is next one will be Monday, September 12th, 2022 at 9 a.m. And our next executive meeting will be June 27th, 2022 at 4:30. And they'll both be via Zoom. And we have General Assembly, which is Monday, June 27th, 2022. And that'd be at 6 p.m. And that'd be a Zoom webinar. And before we adjourn the meeting, I just want to continue to send prayers and condolences to our soldiers and their families that were lost, and also prayers to the victims in Texas and Buffalo who were victims of these senseless acts of violence. And I'm looking forward to our next meeting and working with our mental health professionals and our law enforcement community to ensure that we're doing everything and exhausting our resources to keep our families and children safe and our soft targets safe. So with that being said, if no one has any comments or anything to add, I will adjourn the meeting at 10 a.m. So thank you.